We're going to talk about life, what we've been doing. We'd love to hear what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So we had this grand plan to really put our heads down and work. And this was the whole 200 hours topic last week, I think. But working straight 200 hours, you know, day and night.
In 2 weeks.
But we needed to, and Libby's the one that said it, is that we needed a definitive end goal or something, a reward or something to look forward to afterwards. So we said, if we get this done and we hit certain goals, we had those lined up, that we would treat ourselves and go on a vacation, like a proper vacation. And then we kind of got to it and we're like, well, shoot, like, what the heck do we do?
Yeah. So we're like, what do we do? And sadly, because we didn't really have anything lined up, we're going to do a staycation, but the weather sucks here. So you can't do a staycation. So this is probably what you guys get yourself into too, as an entrepreneur, right? You say, okay, I'm going to put my head down and I'm going to work. I'm going to get this project done. And then you break your old habits because you're trying to meet a deadline, you're trying to do a project, and you break those old habits. And then when you say the project's done, okay, like, we're going to treat ourselves. So you saw me post that the 2 weeks is up. We got just about everything done we wanted to. And then we were like, now what? Because we said we wouldn't treat ourselves until we finished it.
Yeah.
And so then you still got to like book and buy things, and last minute's expensive. I'm cheap. But the other thing we noticed it did to us is that it broke our regular habits, and we're in work mode and we can't get out of work mode. Like, we're still working like 100 hours a week. We cannot stop.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, I find myself looking back and saying, I've done this before. And you just keep working into burnout. And then all of a sudden, like, you hate your life and you hate your business and you're tired and you're like, and you're burnt out. And so what did you do, Chris?
So last minute, I was conspiring with a few people, but last minute booked a 2-day trip flight out to St. John, Virgin Islands.
Ooh, packing the bikini.
Without kids, so that we can have what we've been trying to, honestly, we've been trying to do this. I want to honestly say, like, for the last year, but every time we did, we kind of, you know, it's not a bad thing, but kids.
But kids, man, they ruin everything.
It's still different. Although I enjoy giving experiences and new things to the kids, it's still completely different going on a vacation alone.
It's not a vacation, guys. Let's just be honest. When you take your kids, it's not a vacation. It's an experience.
Yeah.
Whether that's a good or bad experience. I want to sit on the beach, and I don't know if I'm going to drink, because I actually have stopped drinking wine.
But we talked about
it. It's temporary. And just sit on the beach and do nothing and think about nothing and read a book about nothing. And when you take your kids, they're like, Mom, 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 I'm bored. I'm bored. There's no internet.
The food's not good.
I don't like the food. You know, we wanted to treat ourselves for this, working hard, but we didn't book anything, and so we couldn't get out of it. We're still stuck in this habit that we created from the last two weeks. And so I said, okay, you know what, Chris, we're just going to keep working heads down and get even more done. And we have to leave on Tuesday for Tampa for an event. And I said, that will break the cycle. Like, let it break the cycle. So let's just keep working. So we'll be probably said and done like 3 weeks of almost 300 hours of like nonstop work. But oh my God, are we getting some stuff done?
I'm talking like 5:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. I think that we have to remove ourselves from our home.
Because
if you're a mom, you're anchored, your thought process is anchored to that house, whether it's like the laundry, the dishes, cleaning, picking up the kids. I won't even look in my kids' room, although Chris makes sure that they clean it, because I'll flip out on them. So I think we have to remove ourselves. Like, we wanted to reward ourselves this Monday. We were supposed to stop working and say, let's treat ourselves. We were going to go on a staycation to Margaritaville here in Fort Myers, but it was too cold. So we just said, let's just keep working. And so we were like, let's do the next thing. And we noticed on Tuesday, we just said, well, let's keep working. And so we've worked through the whole week, day and night, still getting up, pounding away at getting stuff done, getting the new software done, like getting processes and automations and systems built in, like organize it that we've been waiting for. And Woot Recruit, and launching a whole new course for Woot Recruit customers, hiring course. But I'm like, I'm having so much fun, but I'm tired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if this feels like you, like, do you get yourself in this rut, like, of I'm working hard and now I can't break the cycle. I can't break it. And book yourself a trip to St. John's to break it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but you said that is... Well, the vegging out thing, totally get that. But then you feel guilty afterwards, or you feel, unsatisfied or there's something missing and you're like, now you feel even worse because you're tired and you felt like you didn't really do anything rewarding or accomplish something after the fact. And then you're just kind of like, well, shoot, now I got to go back into it again.
Yeah. So there's this book and I try not to give people like more work to do. I'll drop the link in the chat, but it's called, so Jonathan Potashnick, one of my amazing favorite mentors I ever had in my entire life. And Jonathan, you need to come back and mentor us again. He retired. He was one of the only people I've ever known to own a home service company and a software. Like, he's just absolutely amazing. So he recommended this book to the group and it's called The Power of Full Engagement. And they talk to, and I want to start using this term more, is, you know, in the book, they call it a corporate athlete. We're not corporate, we're entrepreneur athletes. So I want to name it like how people take the word entre and put another word behind it? Like, wait, Choctawpreneurs. So I'm Choctaw, I'm Native American. And so there's a Native American Choctaw business segment and they call us Choctawpreneurs Choctawpreneurs.
Yeah.
So they talk about corporate athletes. So we can call ourselves entrepreneur athletes, right? Business athletes. And they talk about, this is where I learned a lot about managing energy and not time. But they talk about looking at your work style like interval exercising. So we know that interval exercising is really great for us because it makes us exhaust or speed up our heart rate intentionally for a short time and then we have to rest. And then we speed up and then we do it again. And then every time we do this, we're building up the capacity of how long we can raise our heart rate for. And they talk about this like mindset around running your business or managing people or projects. Because again, they call it corporate athletes. And that typically especially in the United States, we're working in states of exhaustion. Like we don't take proper vacations, where in like Europe, they go on vacation for like a month and we don't take proper vacations. They talk about this in learning, and I have learned this in this last 2 weeks to like another level. I understood it before, but these last 2 weeks, I learned it to another level, almost 3 weeks. Pushing yourself to the point of exhaustion. Like, how much can I work? It's like the Elon Musk working 120 hours to get SpaceX like ready to catch the rocket with the chopsticks. So how far can you push yourself? And when you feel yourself being pushed to the point of breaking, stop and rest. And I think it is really insightful because we see athletes do this. We see some movie stars do this. We see some really big, like high powered people do this. Like if you follow Dan Martell, you see them do this. They don't talk about it, but they play hard and they party hard, right? And I don't mean like drinking or drugs. I mean like party hard as in like they go away. They go to an island. They go to a beach. They go on a boat. They don't just stay in their house and like consider that rest.
Yeah.
And the book is really insightful because we need to listen to ourselves when it comes to running and managing businesses. It's like, where is my breaking point? I think we operate past it. And that's why we're irritable, we're miserable, we're micromanaging. We're not the greatest bosses. We're not operating in our unique ability. We're not, and this is something we do in our couples meetings to call each other out, but we're not operating from our inner scorecard and our inner values, right? Because we're not ourself. We're burnt out. We're overworked and we're tired. What we're not doing is stopping to realize that's my breaking point. I hit my breaking point. Probably my employees probably felt that breaking point because I was short with them and I was distant. I've learned to control my emotions. But they could probably tell because I was short and distant. I was trying to get the project done and I worked through that breaking point. So now it's time to like stop and rest. But what's proper rest, right? Rest looks like different to everybody. I tried to do it in the house on that Monday saying, okay, we're done. Let's rest. And my computer's just staring at me. Like my computer's just staring at me like, I see you. And so is my phone. And like, I'm trying not to like look at my phone and I have like, but it's still there. And so it's not proper rest. It's not.
I think that's why I like climbing, because literally you have two hands and they both got to be on the rope or they're on the wall. And so it's an easy way to separate from, again, the distractions.
Yeah.
So honestly, that's where I'm headed here. I should be.
I think it's fresh in my mind because I hit like a new breaking point in these last 2 weeks of trying to get stuff done and exhaustion. And like I said, if you saw me on a live, I look like somebody like rode me hard and put me away wet. I was like looking like death with like a hoodie on and jogging pants for like 2 weeks straight. And if you saw a reel, it was probably like a past reel that of where I was like made up. But what is there? What is your there? Like you said, I hit there. I get there too often. What is there? Like, I don't need you to answer me what is there. I'm asking for everyone to think, what is my there?
It's very subjective.
What is my there? Like, what's there that I get there too often? There is the breaking point.
We're going to get there and then stop.
But what's there? Because like in business, you should see me right now, dude. If you could see my Trello boards, my computers, we use Trello for project management. If you could see the wall behind this camera and the amount of drawings, I wasn't trying to move it. The amount of drawings I have on the walls. I use the giant sticky notes, the giant ones, the giant sticky notes that, you know, they never end. Even when you get it done, there's another piece. It breaks. Something happens. Automations don't work. Automations lose their mind, you know, and, but what's your there? You have to think about like, what's your there? I told Chris going forward, are there, I'm confident that I don't need to necessarily have my there be like a finished project. My there needs to be a date. Like on this date, we are now stopping and resting, but I will work hard. It's a sprint. So we started to do sprints in the companies, and a sprint is like a 2 week run, fast and hard, stop, assess, how to go, what worked, what didn't. Some of this stuff will also be in the book and the new framework that we're rolling out for 1LD, the coaching program. Uh-huh. So, you know, at the end of the sprint, you know, you have to have a date and a definitive stop, because as the owner, you'll work hard. You'll get down and like grind it out. And because there's no definitive end date, I'm sorry, end to a project. In reality, there is no end to a project. You can tweak it and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it to death. Yesterday, I did a live on, are you tinkering with your business or are you growing your business and scaling it? I think we get in the tinker, tinker, tinker mode. And that's like shiny objects. Let me buy this and let me do that. And let me rearrange the schedule 500 times, because you could tinker a project to death and there's no end date. So my there is a date.
Yeah. So I have a lot to say about that recently, because in software, there's a term called minimum viable product. And this is something that more so with development that really defines what a product needs, where a product needs to be in order to, again, be suitable to either work or sell or whatever. But the term minimum viable product is something that I think is easier to relate to the 80-20 rule of what is good enough. Not that it's a bad thing, but if you shoot for done, then done is never going to happen, because there's always going to be something to improve on. So what I've been doing lately and recently, and this goes back into another kind of mindset and framework that I live by, it's finding that minimum viable product in anything that I do to make sure that I can hit it subjectively and I can pull away.
Yeah. And so I know there's a ton of cleaning business owners on here. This is not a term that we use in cleaning. This is a great term. This is what we live by now. Minimum viable product. That's even if you're doing a project, revamping sales, revamping your customer success, revamping a role, a pay scale, anything. What's the minimum viable product? How can I call this done so that you can do the now what Chris is going to describe? Which is stepping away.
Yeah. And so in order to do this and to put it into actual real use, to practical use, because I mean, if you just say the words minimum viable product, it's like, what is that? But a simple way, let's say for a basic, let's say a cleaning company or just a home service business, is how do you apply this to you? Two phrases you need to repeat to yourself whenever you do anything is, number one, what needs to be true for me to call this done? Or what needs to be true for this to happen? And secondly is, and many of you have probably heard this if you've done any onboarding with us, and this is something that the framework that I use in practice, is what can we do after the fact? By defining these two things of the minimum viable product, what needs to be true as an absolute certainty, and then what can be done later, it starts to open up that 80-20 where you can hit that threshold and then pull off and still feel comfortable with yourself, because you've accomplished the done, which is the 80%. It's the what needs to be true. And you feel satisfied inside.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really great, and here's the other thing that we do. We run to a project and we try to like nail it out till it's completed. And what does that mean? What does that look like? And then we never touch it again. And typically the first ideation of it is not great. And so by doing what's the minimum viable product, what's good enough. What's the 80-20? What's the 80, right? You can then step away from that sprint, that 2 weeks, step away and let it work. Like, watch it run. And then you come back and say, okay, what didn't work? What's broken? What do we need to adjust? Or, you know what? This was horrible. Let's scrap it and start over. That happens. And you didn't spend like 100% of the time on it like you would have if you were trying to get it done to completion. So I think this is really, really, really insightful for home service business owners. We don't use this phrase. We don't even use this thought process. We're just trying to get a project done. And it's so subjective of what done looks like.
Yeah. And that's honestly, that for me has been the saving grace. Before I started to implement that, before I started to practice and use those phrases, my world was a complete disaster. This was coming in into meetings, coming out of meetings. I swear to you, I repeat this every single conversation that I have, even with the kids, is what needs to be true for you to feel comfortable with XYZ, what needs to be true for this to happen.
So I want you guys to ask yourself that question, and you're going to realize when you start this, you have no clue what needs to be true. You don't even know. You're like, oh, huh. Like, I don't know. Like, what does need to be true? And it makes you think to a different level to say, actually, it's not as difficult as I thought, or it actually creates some simplicity in the thought process of when you're trying to do something like rebuild your marketing or revamp sales or recreate your training. What needs to be true is a really, really good and insightful question to ask yourself, because you're going to, and this is why projects take forever and there's no end date and we don't get them done, because we didn't stop to say what needs to be true. And then you're like, oh, well, this is actually pretty simple. Versus if you don't ask yourself that question, you go to overthink mode. Like overcomplicate mode, overdo it mode. And then all of a sudden you've created this project that is 100 times larger or more complicated than it needed to be.
Yeah. I think that's also, you know, where some people might struggle with operating systems, you know, just say like with EOS, sometimes there is clearly defined rocks, but at the same time, it's still a level of subjectivity. You know, it's hard to nail that in, but again, those two phrases there have been my saving grace. You know, it goes into my calendars. It goes into the things, again, like I said, it's like a threshold. As soon as I'm coming into a meeting or as soon as I come out, this is something that just word vomit out of my mouth. It happens naturally now because I've made it a habit, and it's saved me so many times over.
And this is a great phrase for your kids, because our 16-year-old Austin will like try to, and when I say argue something, or he doesn't argue, he's very respectful. He's just very, very competitive, hard-headed. I wonder where he gets it from. Or if he's trying to like prove a point or do something, he, you know, Chris will ask him, so what needs to be true? And he'll be like, huh. And then all of a sudden he ain't got nothing to say.
He's like, actually, I'm good.
So it's a really great phrase to use with your children as well, your employees, your leadership, your management. And if they don't know what needs to be true, say, hey, no problem. When you figure that out, feel free to come back. So it's a great phrase. It makes you unlock a different side of thinking. And sometimes it feels like we're alone or we're losing our minds. But in reality, we're going through the same thing, just like everybody else. Just it's different levels. But at the same time, it's the same thing. It doesn't really change. No matter how large you get, no matter how companies you have, no matter how many employees you have or you don't have, it's almost the same thing. Business is nothing but cycles.
Yeah.
And it's the same cycle, like over and over and over. And I think that's also, though, what creates us to be stronger, because it's the cycle and it keeps coming back. And we learn every time it comes back how to approach it differently. And we're building that muscle of how to handle strength and how to become fearless.
And same cycle, different environment.
Same cycle, different environment. And listen to yourself. I think over the last year, I spent a tremendous amount of time and money like trying to understand myself. Because I realized my business wasn't broken. I didn't have bad people. I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to even understand my thoughts or communicate my thoughts. And I think we don't do enough of listening to ourselves, like inner work, breath work, mindset work. One of the things that me and Chris, I'm not political at all, that, you know, we notice about Elon Musk. What do you think one of the biggest traits is? What do you think his key trait is that he has that makes him so successful? What do you think it is?
We've pinned it.
We've pinned it. We've pinned it, and I'm trying to really keep that front of mind.
Yeah.
But we've pinned it. Why do you think he can have SpaceX and Tesla and whatever the heck else he's doing? I don't watch a lot of, even though I'm on social media, I don't watch a lot of social media. So, like, what is it? Chris, tell them what it is.
Well, I sometimes overcomplicate it. So I would let you, I'll let you say it.
His ability to communicate clearly.
There you go. Because I couldn't do that.
It's his unique ability. It's his ability to communicate clearly and unbiasedly. Mm-hmm. Is that a word? Is that a phrase?
No.
No.
It is now.
It is now. Like, even when you saw him campaign, like, who cares who you voted for? Who cares if you drive a Tesla? When you saw him communicate, he has the ability to communicate at a high, clear level without bias, like, or emotion.
Extreme clarity.
I'm talking extreme clarity. And then I feel like where, like, small business owners get into trouble or we struggle is we don't know how to do that. Like, we let our emotions, because our business is our baby. Like, we carried it for 9 months and we birthed it and we nursed it and we fed it and we've raised it. And we're so biased to our business. We're so protective to it, is that, and that we cannot communicate clearly and without bias. We can't. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WootRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today. When we were in the meeting and one of our employees said that people were scared of me and that a phrase was said to me like, well, you're a millionaire. You own $1 million business. I'm like, I was going to die. I was like, going to lose it. And then I was like, okay, thank you for that insight. The old Libby would have been like, look, and just kind of let my emotions take over the meeting. But that is the way they thought. And that is the way I was communicating to them. And I had to take a step back and kind of assess myself. But I thought, I was like, you know, I am too protected. Like, I am so biased about the company. I'm so biased about my feelings and my thoughts about our company, right? Instead of saying, are we as good as we think we are? I said, no, I don't think we are as good as we think we are. Like, we need to be real and assess, like, how good is our customer service? How good is our cleaning? Like, how good is our quality? How good is our software? And talk about it in an unbiased, honest, and open way. And then the employees didn't like that because they were like, well, no, we're great. And I'm like, wait a minute, you guys are great. But let's talk about, like, are we really as good as we think we are? Because we're biased. And I saw that in like watching videos and listening to him. It wasn't what he was saying. It was how he communicated in the most neutral but open and honest way.
The best way I can explain this also is that, and think about this in the way that you talk as well, is every single word that came out of his mouth was intentional. There was no backtracking. There was no
storytelling.
Right. And there was no redirecting in terms of the output that was expected from the words that came out of his mouth.
No storytelling, right? And no, also no blame.
Yeah. It's amazing if you watch him talk through a conversation.
And hardly anybody's mad at the guy. Like, okay, politics aside, like, you're just kind of like, well, that made a lot of sense. Like, what he just said, you're kind of like,
I can't really be upset. I mean,
and I think this is our small business struggle. Yeah. And what the difference I see in, like, successful people that I've hired for mentors that we talk about and that we follow, and then looking at someone like Elon Musk, how can he do these things? Now, to be honest, I don't think, like, people are inherently bad employees. They don't come to not do their job, right? But because he can communicate so clearly, like, with his staff and what he wants and what the outcome is supposed to be with an unbiased, unemotional strategy, he can get so much stuff done because people are doing it for him, right? We all have employees. But like Erica said, she has trouble communicating. You know, I'm going to not lie. I'm struggling right now with something. Uh-huh. Keep going. I'll tell you my struggle in a second. I'll leave you.
My brain is like, I got a ton of things, but it boils down to how pure his vision is. And I want to circle back to asking you guys that. If you have difficulties communicating, think to yourself, how pure is the goal or how pure is the vision? Because if it was in fact pure, then there wouldn't be any wavering in conversation, in communication, because that would be the sole focus. That would be the thing that you do or speak about or execute on to the fullest degree.
I agree. And so this is where we're going now, because that's what I did. So I was struggling for the last few months. So I have Marilyn. She's my amazing assistant and she helps me with everything. So if you email me, she's going to see it. If you Facebook message me, she's going to see it. And we had hired a head of marketing in one of the companies that came in, and she was so sweet. She was a great core value fit. Like, we loved her, but she was struggling with like confidence in the job. And everyone in the marketing team, which I was in there because I was heading marketing and I hired her to take my place. Marilyn was in there because she follows me everywhere and helps me stay on track. And then the other marketing members, that we have a tech person and we have a video person, and they were all in there and they were saying how much they loved her and that they love her much better than the way I was doing things.
They didn't say specifically those words.
But I'm sitting in there and I'm like, well, crap, like that's not like, and I felt like my feelings got hurt. And they didn't say those words. They're like, oh, we love the structure. We love how now we know what we're doing. Because, you know, if you're working for the entrepreneur, you wake up and every day looks different. We're like, we're going to do a webinar tonight. And so it kind of hurt me, right? I took it bias. I didn't know how to recommunicate it. And I did tell Marilyn, I said, you know what? I have not been giving you anything to do. I've just been doing the stuff myself because I kind of like just said, oh, I don't want to bother her. She didn't like when I was doing things, but she never said that. I took it like by it. Like I took it from a place of emotion and bias, because I was sitting in that seat and it's my company and everything you said to me hurt my feelings. But then there's no feelings in business. No, business doesn't have feelings. Business does not care if you're sick, if you're pregnant, if you're nursing, if you're going through a divorce. It doesn't care. I know that because I've been through all those things. It doesn't care. It is a brutal, brutal thing that will take you to your limits and push you as hard as it can till the breaking point. And it is times of like happiness and sadness, but also there is this space of joy and like reward and legacy that you're building. So going back to my story of like telling Marilyn, like, I don't want to ask her to help me because she wants things structured, like she wants it planned out. And I get an idea and I just want to do it. Like, just let's do it. And so I told her, I said, you know what? I have not been asking you for help, because she's like, I have time. Like, you know, is there anything you need? And I'm like, no. And so I took it that way. So to Chris's point, is your vision clear over the last...
Not clear, but pure.
Pure. Is your vision pure and detailed? So I've been rewriting all of them and I'm actually happy to show everybody. I could do a like a live on the new business structure, the structure of Libby DeLucian LLC, the vivid visions of four companies. And what really helped me just get a much clearer mindset was, what am I selling? What what are we selling? I redid the core values so that every company had the same core values, because I own all of them and they were different core values. And I'm like, this is craziness. But I redid the core values so they're true to me and who we hire and fire and promote and off those things. But what I also did was, I wrote down, like, my vision is pure, but also, like, what am I selling to people? What is the purpose of Organize It? Is it just cleaning houses? It's not. And what's the purpose of Woot Recruit? Is it just getting people in your door? It's not. And so when I, and like Sell, Convert, Clean, like the new software, you know what we're selling in that? We're selling confidence. Confidence to quote the job. Consistently every time. And so when I sat down and I wrote these, they're pure, like what we're doing is so pure and so intentional. It broke that emotional state that I was in of saying, oh, I don't want to ask them for help. I don't want to ask them for anything. Cause, and you know, the head of marketing that we had, we let her go a few months ago and I'm back in there. So that's been over for a while. But that was like my story of, no matter in our business, whether we're communicating it or receiving it, we're taking it from a place of emotion and bias. And that is the thing I see. Elon Musk's superpower. Is there one thing that turned you into focused machines to get to your done? It's the vision. It's the pure vision and clarity of what we're trying to achieve, to me. And also, Amy, here's the other thing. It's also knowing what I don't want. Like, I don't want this. I don't want a single location, $4 million cleaning company. I don't even want a single location, $3 million cleaning company.
I think that's a
I don't want that. And so, like, knowing what I don't want, but also, like, nailing down the vision. The vision is, like, why are we doing this? When I sat down to make the new vision for Libby DeLucien as an ecosystem specifically for cleaning, I am creating an ecosystem to help you with different facets of your business of cleaning. When I said, oh, my God, like, this is a cleaning movement, all of a sudden, the energy I have. Last night it was midnight. And I told Chris, I said, is it sad that I want to go to sleep so I can wake up so I can do more work?
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Like, let's go to sleep so I can wake up and do more work and drink coffee. And it's crazy. Like, when you get the vision, it's so pure and so aligned that, like, you eliminate all distractions. Like, I am not, I got myself off of Voxer. So, like, sadly, I'm missing, like, the coaches threads, the elite comments. Some of my friends were on there. I had to get rid of distractions because now my mission is so pure. And I got rid of Voxer like a year ago. I started this journey about a year ago. And so, like, I've eliminated, I dropped out of certain things and only kept the ones that were contributing to my vision. Right. So I've dropped out of a couple networking groups, of mentorship groups, of free stuff. Like, because if all we're doing is joining calls all day long, I can't get to my vision. Like, I can't get there. And so I've had to learn self, like, mastery of how do I work, how I can get things done. Because I was in this cycle of, like, trying to join every call, like having FOMO of, oh, there's a call here and there's a call there and there's this and there's that. And there's, like, no, what is going to get me to the vision?
And that's where I was going to come back to. I think it's true, especially if you were to ask yourself in the opposite, what needs to be true for me to get rid of the things I don't want or that are causing me stress? What needs to be true to eliminate the negatives? And then go through each one individually and ask that statement and then identify that thing that needs to be true. That would be that clear marker. And then you write that thing down. And then that becomes your absolute goal.
When I practiced EOS, I hated the, like, what is done look like? Like, what is done? Like, oh, here's a rock. And you're like, make a customer service program.
And cascading.
And you're like, well, that could be giant. Like, what's a customer service program? Is it automated? Is it manual? Like, what are the, like, just not the steps, but then the verbiage and who's doing it. And then you got to put it in your CRM. And if your CRM doesn't do it, then you got to buy another software. And then you're just like, oh my God. So I think one of the things that I self-sabotaged in, and so did Chris, when it came to what is your, like, done is you don't get there. It says my done never seems to come. Is be true with yourself. Don't self-sabotage, right? Don't overcommit. We're all, if we're like many, many women, especially cleaning business owners, I want you to think about this. We self-sabotage because we overcommit because we are inherently
nurturing.
Like, we're trying to please. It's a trait of women. It's a superpower, but also your kryptonite. And then in cleaning, we got into cleaning because we want to help. We want to nurture. We want to please people. And so what does your done look like? One of the things that I made a lot of mistakes on was I did not clearly define what done was. Done can be any stage. Done isn't a customer success program. That is not done. That would take a year to do correctly.
Yeah.
Done is a customer service program's sequence and verbiage. Done. That's it. Then that's your minimum viable product. Like, what is that? Who's doing it? Great. Then it's the next phase of, okay, now we have this. The verbiage is working. Now, do we want to automate it? Do we want to put in our CRM? Like, done to us isn't, we're overthinking done. Our done is too large. So that's why I didn't like rocks. It's 90 days. It's too long. I get distracted. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go play over here. Like, so that's why we decided to do 2-week sprints
which is more of a practice in software. Again, because it evolves so quickly.
And so done, Amy, could just be create the cadence. How often do I want to touch out? Okay, that's done. Mini reward. Then come back to it and say, okay, now maybe I'm going to create the verbiage. Maybe if you can't do the verbiage and the cadence at the same time, break them up. But then it moves along. Because also, like, you're going to find that you're going to be working on things that become irrelevant.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, irrelevant. You're like,
all 13 of these to-dos ended up.
Well,
not being relevant.
That sucked. Like, I just made this and we don't even need it now. So you're going to realize that it also could become irrelevant. It could become unnecessary, or by fixing something else, it fixed this. So I think you're done can be controlled, but we want to overdo it. We want to overcommit. We want to finish it. And software taught me this, is that there is no done to a product in software. Mm-hmm. It's never done. I mean, it's never done. Right now I'm watching the tech team build out the new software that we're getting ready to release. And I was like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. Like, I don't even know, because we don't know the code that it was built on. So because I bought the code from like the other partner and then I bought him out, and I'm just going like, and now I know like why software is never done. That project's never done. What you don't want will push you. For the longest time, Faith, I didn't know how to write my vision, but I knew what I didn't want. Mm-hmm. So watch the people around you, watch your mentors. I watched Debbie, and I watched Paul Fasshauer, and I watched Molly and Jamie. They're my friends. Like, I love them, but I watch what they're doing. And I said, they have great businesses. And just because I don't want something they have is not bad. It's actually a learning lesson. Like, hey, you know what? I don't want that, but I do love this.
So I want to go more so to a psychological part, which is, you know, how we're built is that fear is so much more of a stronger emotion than happiness. And the reason for that is because, again, think about it, back in the day, is you either ran or you died. You know, if there was a lion or something that was there and they scratched you, it was again, you got hurt. There's fear in there. It burns into your brain so that you never forget that experience again. So the stronger the fear, the more you remember, or in this case, the more that it's ingrained into your habits. And that's why we have so many self-sabotaging moments, because the fear has overridden the kind of the positive side. And so fear is an extremely strong emotion. And so if you think about it in that way, is instead of saying what I want, because that can be a little bit softer, is what I don't want can invoke that fear and drive you to actually get something done where maybe you were failing at it before.
Yeah. And for all of our listeners, man, we do our couples quarterly and we work on self-sabotaging. You don't realize you're self-sabotaging because you're running on an emotional high. So it's like you watch a webinar, you watch a training, and it's like this, and that's our job. So I do webinars and I sell software online and I do training, and I stopped doing webinars, and I stopped doing them just because I didn't want to do them. I didn't like it. It wasn't my thing. I'd rather just give free training and attract people through values. But you're running on an emotional high at that time. Like when you go to a conference and you're on that webinar and you want to buy it because you think it's the solution. There's self-sabotaging tendencies within us that once you do the exercise, it will change the way you look at yourself. Like it changes everything about how you perceive yourself. It changes everything about you. And you start to, because Chris points them out to me, he's like, hey, don't do that. You said that. You said you weren't going to say that. And I've stopped. I have stopped self-sabotaging, and I felt myself get tons more momentum.
And so I'll even lean into this too, in terms of, again, couples quarterly and self-sabotage and going through that exercise together with that open accountability. I've actually created bumpers around my world to help lean into Libby's self-sabotaging moment. So I actually have an 11 o'clock alarm every single day that says protect Libby at all costs.
Yeah. And so does Marilyn. Like Marilyn gets the update. Like they're like, shields up.
And 11:30 on Mondays, I have one that is push Libby.
Yeah.
And what that is for her, the other self-sabotaging moment, which is I'm not ready or we're not just there yet.
Yeah. So I self-sabotage a lot. Chris, so I help him because he self-sabotages. So I'm like, hey, you said you weren't going to do that. And then because I said I need people in my life to push me. I've always had it. We talked about my ex the other day in our couples quarterly. He pushed me a lot. Well, he also physically pushed me, but he pushed me a lot to grow. It was a very weird and sick relationship at times because he would push me to be better and bigger, but then he would knock me down at the same time. And so I grew very fast and very influential in the industry I was in at that time because he pushed me. I loved being in like the Dan Martell group because having access to Dan one-on-one, he'll push you. Like he'll call you on call. He will cuss you out, call you out, like you name it. And he'll be like, show me your computer screen. Like if you asked a question or made an excuse and you're like, okay, I'm sorry, I won't ask again. But I need that to push me because I keep telling myself, oh, I'm not ready. Oh, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I say that phrase, oh, I'm not ready yet. And so he every Monday push me. But then the other one is protect me because it's going to sound like a funny self-sabotaging, but I am committed to my commitments. It's so weird. So strongly that it is like debilitating.
I think the words were that you stick too strongly to your morals.
I stick too strongly to my morals, which sounds weird. And no one's trying to get me to like do anything bad, but I stick so strongly to my morals that I inconvenience or hurt myself. And that's where he has to help protect me, because I will hurt myself. I'll overwork myself. I'll inconvenience myself because I'm so true to my morals. Again, it comes from my past and past trauma.
And I would say that, again, fear is the biggest motivator. Is you were so scared to break your morals or not live by them that you obsessed over them.
And then how can I be self-aware when I do these things? How can I be self-aware? They happen at the same time, guys. They always happen at the same time, like self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm. So they may happen while you're in a webinar. They may happen while you're at a conference. Know that this is when you react this way and start to coach yourself. Oh, you know what? I don't need anything right now. I already bought blah, 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 and I need to implement it. Like, I'm already in this group. I don't have time for another one. Know when it happens. They happen at the same time.
Know what environments trigger it so you can be on watch, and you'll find that you can see it much, much easier.
Yes.
Over time, you're going to learn specific triggers or specific, like literally walking in a door where you know that people are going to be. If there's a self-sabotaging moment that has to do with people, know that as soon as you walk in the door, you're about to catch that override.
I did a coaching call with somebody yesterday, and she goes, oh my God, I buy stuff every time I go to a conference, and I buy something from all the vendors that are there. And I said, okay, well, the next time you go, you have to have like morals and what trumps what, like those decision-making frameworks. Like, so I said, you know what? So this time you're going to buy nothing. You're not allowed to buy a single thing. And if you do, you have to answer to me, and I'm going to ask you why. And you have to sit on it for a week and think about, do I really need it? And by the time that week comes, if that's still in your head, then it's probably something that you did need. And you're not operating from a place of emotion or high, like an endorphin high or adrenaline high. The next question is, what was I thinking the moment I self-sabotaged? It's a very good question. What was I thinking? Like, is it, I found that at times when I would say I'm not ready, I wasn't thinking at all. It was a complete reaction because I had gotten so used to saying, I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
So I will say that this question alone is going to be very hard if you don't dig deep. If you just give a surface level answer to yourself, it will stay surface level and you will not be able to break through it. What I've found is that in sitting through it and going through this exercise, you actually have to have a dialogue. You actually have to have a conversation either with yourself, hopefully somebody else, and talk through it as much as possible, because it's going to be something that's under something that's under something that is the trigger. And you're not going to find it if you just give yourself a 5-word answer within the minute that you ask yourself that question. And so I want to share for me one of my self-sabotaging tendencies, which I'm working through, and I feel confident that I've worked really, really strongly through it. But for me, it was the entire opposite, which was stepping away from situations or stepping away from things, because one of my biggest self-sabotaging tendencies was that I was too worried about what I thought other people thought about me. Like, I've said this before, but it's not what they're actually thinking, but it was what I thought they were thinking. If you've ever seen Zoolander, you know, or no, it's a dodgeball. Anyway, but it's what I thought they were thinking. That was my biggest self-sabotaging moment, because then I started to get inside my own head, and whatever I was doing, my performance went down dramatically. I was full of anxiety. I started to make the wrong decisions because I was on an emotional high and I was not thinking clearly. And so a ton of things go into this, but with that self-sabotaging feeling of what are other people thinking about me, or what do I think about it, I actually had to step into the fire with a lot of things. And this is more of a disruptive way of doing things with the social aspect, is stepping into environments that you're uncomfortable with and embracing it.
So it's so interesting. I had to step out. I could give a crap what people think about me. Oh, like, we're the total opposite on certain things. And he had to step into social environments.
Yeah. And so the reason I had to do that is because I needed to make sure that I could correct myself with thinking, with honestly just thinking, period. And so now I have an override where I don't think. It's more of an I act. It's more so down to what we talked about with Elon Musk, is that pure focus, that pure intention of whatever it is that you have, like right now. And so it's all about leaning into the moment in the pure intent. There's a book I always reference, and honestly, this one I need to reread again, The Courage to Be Disliked. It's kind of a narrative, but it's been really great. But it's been really great to go through that exercise of what really matters. Like, what the hell? Like, what?
I got in trouble for the last live. I cussed too much, so Facebook gave me a warning. So that's why I'm being proper.
H-E double H.
I think you can say that word.
But The Courage to Be Disliked, it's looking at it more in an altruistic way of leaning into something without feeling that anxiety. For me, that was the sabotaging moment. And just, yeah, leaning into it and saying yes to everything instead of pulling away and saying, I'm not sure, I don't know. But leaning into it, because if I say yes, or if I start to lean in into that conversation, again, with my breathing exercises, I can start to control exactly what I'm thinking and it becomes less stressful. So I think it's kind of a roundabout way of saying it, but you know, there's having to step away, but there's also having to lean into something.
Yeah, I have to step away. So those questions were great. You know, write them down. I can repeat them real fast. You know, how can I recognize it as soon as it happens? What can we do to overwrite this part of the daily practice? How can I be self-aware when I do these things? At what was I thinking the moment I self-sabotaged? What was happening in that moment? And what are the things I could have told myself in the moment? So just to be, I'm going to read you my self-sabotaging, and I'll just read the high-level overview. So I self-sacrifice is one. That's the overcommitting to almost, and I've gotten much better, but I have to have bumpers over around that because I will overcommit to my own detriment, to hurting my family or myself, as in like overpromising, overworking, overcommitting, holding so tight to my morals if I said I was going to do something, and always trying to be there. Again, you're a mom, you're inherently empathetic and a people pleaser. We are, like, as direct as you could be. Any assessment in the world could tell you you're like a fact finder and a D and this and that. At the end of the day, it doesn't tell you about your feelings. And your feelings are what really, actually, our feelings are how we react to everything in our life. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.